And good morning, everybody. It's Monday, September 25th. This is Mountain Money on KPCW Radio. I'm Renee Bodley. Good morning to our guest co-host this morning. My regular co-host, Doug Wells, is on assignment, as we like to say in the news world. Filling in for Doug today is Roger Goldman, who's filled in before, so he's a familiar voice to all of you. He's a member of KPCW's board. And Roger, you said a recovering lawyer.
I am a recovering lawyer. I left the practice of law after about 35 years, and it's been about 395 days since my last brief.
And you were a lawyer at a pretty big law firm.
I was a big firm lawyer. I spent my career as a Washington big firm lawyer, which is really something that most people hold in contempt. It was an interesting career. I saw a lot of interesting things, and I learned a lot. And a lot of it has helped me sort of really value what it's like to live here in Park City. And I know you're going to tell us a little bit about yesterday's amazing weather.
Yeah, and it's amazing to live in Park City because at the end of September, you get snow like this. It looks absolutely beautiful outside. But folks, the snow is gone. It's going to be going. It's going to be high 45 today, and it's going to be mostly sunny afternoon. We're going to have some patchy fog around this morning before noon. Otherwise, mostly sunny, high of 45. Tonight, mostly clear, low of 28. And tomorrow, it's going to be in the 50s, you guys. It's going to be high of 54 on Tuesday, high of 61 on Wednesday, high of 61 on Thursday. So, Roger, the snow's going to melt.
But yesterday, there were some outstanding Facebook posts. I want to tell you two of my favorites, one of which was a group of snowboarders who hiked up Deer Valley and went down and managed to do some face shots on only that small 10 inches of powder. And the other was a group on the seventh hole of Promontory's golf course. There were four elk, and they apparently let the other players play through.
So we were joking about snowboarders on Deer Valley, and this is a business show. You are listening to Mountain Money. And a big business story is going to be the sale of Deer Valley. And from what I hear, that sale is supposed to close early October. Now, of course, we heard from everybody who works at Deer Valley that nothing's going to change this year. So we're anticipating the season for 2017-2018 to be the same. But keep an eye out for some changes, and we will let you know as we hear them here on KPCW.
Let's just hope they don't do anything to hurt the food.
The food is good up there. Okay, the time is 9:09. We've got a great show lined up for you. We are going to be talking to Troy D'Ambrosio. He is the executive director of the Lassonde Entrepreneur Institute at the University of Utah. They've had a really exciting year. They just released their annual report. We'll hear more about that. We're also going to hear from Jim Lane, the owner of Avon and Ideal Theaters in Heber City. As you drive down Main Street in Heber City, you'll see two theaters relatively close to each other. I think they're about a block apart. Is that right, Bob?
That's correct. About a block apart, yes.
That's Bob Hendricks, our producer and program director here, Midway resident, and who knows a lot about Heber. And then at the end, we're going to talk to Brett Webster of Webster Gallery right here in Old Town's Main Street. We're going to talk to him just about the challenges of owning an art gallery and also having a business on Main Street these days. The time is 9:10. Mountain Money will be right back.
This is Ryan Hoffman, manager at Mountain West Bank, sponsor of KPCW. We're a community bank with a great understanding of our local needs. Mountain West Bank has something unheard of nowadays, but I can't say it on the radio. We're next to the movies near Kearns Boulevard at 649-3369, Division of Glacier Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender. Cookies on Fridays.
Mountain Money on KPCW is sponsored in part by Columbus Pacific Properties, introducing Apex Residences, 63 ski-through community residences located at Park City's expanded Canyon Village, with clubhouse amenities, heated outdoor pool, and in-house concierge. Information at apexparkcity.com.
Welcome back to Mountain Money. I'm Renee Bodley, here with my co-host Roger Goldman. We've got a great show for you. We're going to start with something pretty exciting at the University of Utah. The Lassonde Institute, they said they have had their biggest year ever. They're featured in the New York Times, Architectural Digest, and Fast Company. What is the Lassonde Institute? Well, joining us on the phone is Troy D'Ambrosio, the executive director, also the assistant dean at the David Eccles School of Business at the U. Good morning.
Good morning, Renee.
Good morning. Can you give our listeners a little bit of an overview of what the Institute does and how it fits into the university as a whole?
Yes, sure, Roger. Thank you very much, and thanks for having me. So the Lassonde Entrepreneur Institute has been around since 2002. We're focused on helping student entrepreneurs dream big, try new things, test out ideas, and eventually launch some companies. We also work with faculty and vendors to help them commercialize technology coming out of the university labs.
So the Institute, you don't teach classes at the Institute. You're a sort of a separate support or incubator function for entrepreneurs within the university community?
That's correct. Our academic home is in the David Eccles School of Business, and there's an entrepreneur and strategy department within the business school that teaches the classes and is the academic side, offers degrees in entrepreneurship, majors, minors, and certificates. But we provide the programmatic side of activities for students. So we're the applied learning side of the university. While we're academically headquartered in the business school, we're open to every student in the university, from freshmen to PhDs and from business to fine arts to engineering.
So what percentage of the students come from the business school versus the other schools at the U?
Yeah, so our students, we're an open community of students that can come and participate in multiple ways. So about a third of the students that participate with us are business school students, about a third are engineering, and the balance come from all over the rest of campus.
And if I'm a student who is, say, an undergraduate economics student, and I have this entrepreneurial idea, how would the Institute help me turn that into some kind of reality?
Yeah, we have a multiple set of resources for students, everything from small seed funding, milestone grants we can provide you. So here's $200 or $300 to start the idea and try it, and then we'll keep seed funding that as it progresses. We provide workshops for students to get skills that they need to start their company. So it might be learning QuickBooks or how to make an effective Kickstarter video. And then we have a physical facility that has full prototyping equipment that's available free to students to use. So 3D printers, laser cutters, glue guns, oscilloscopes, table saws, welding equipment. And then we actually provide office space for students that need that, that get that far along in their startup idea where they need a physical space to run their business out of. And we have law firms, Jones Waldo and Tanner & Company is an accounting firm that help provide support services to students to help them actually implement and get their businesses running. So really all the way from you have an idea, we'll help you get it going, to you've got a business, we'll help you get it launched and run it for a period of time.
And you say this year has been your best year ever, according to your annual report. What were some of the highlights?
Yeah, so the big thing that happened this last year was we opened the new physical facility, our building, the LaSan Studios, and that's got the 20,000 square foot innovation space that has the prototyping facilities and the company launch spaces for students, combined with a 400 bed residential dorm. And what we hoped to do was actually increase the engagement of students in the program, and it really exceeded all of our expectations. So we had over nearly 8,000 students engage with us in some activity this last year. That's up from about 2,000 the previous year before we had the building open. And then the other big jump that we saw in the number of startup teams, students that have identified with an idea, come in and engage with us and are moving along the entrepreneurial path, that went from about 100 the year before to over 300 this past year. So we had 300 student startup teams just in the last academic year take some step towards starting a business.
So who ends up living upstairs? Are those mostly business students, or are they also students from all of the various schools in the campus?
Yeah, they are from all over campus. So we take all the way in our residential community, all the way from freshmen to PhD students. So we had 45 different majors represented in the building last year, and we'll have that same number of diverse students in there this year. So they come from business and engineering, but atmospheric science, dance, music, health sciences. So really an eclectic group of entrepreneurial students that have identified they want to live in a 24-hour immersive entrepreneurial community.
Now, you've talked about sort of providing support through accounting and legal resources. Do you actually also go all the way to sort of helping them make contact with venture capital or angel investments as they start to move toward a stage one kind of a development?
Yes, we do that as well. So we have good relationships and partnerships with local seed investors, specifically Campus Founders Fund, which is part of the Kickstart group, and they actually have a couple of students that they're embedded in our community that they provide scholarships to really help students understand how to take that step to getting the first outside investment into their company.
I think our listeners would be interested in hearing some of the kinds of projects that have actually emerged, some of the companies. I know that when I looked through your website, I saw some of the startups and the various projects in various stages that were fascinating to me. For example, I saw one called Blurp. Are you familiar with that one?
Yes, very familiar with
Blurp. Can you tell us a little about it? It looked like fun to me.
Yeah, so that's an app where you can actually send by an SMS or text message an audio clip from a movie or a TV show So if you want to send Make My Day to somebody, you can send it via text, and it's a very elegant kind of solution to be kind of able to share those kind of audio clips back and forth. Very interesting app that they're getting launched and getting content on and have a couple of thousand users already.
So how would that – what would the revenue stream for something like that come from?
You know, that's one of the exploration activities that we're doing with that team, right? And then we're an educational component, so we're helping them learn how to get that launched, how what the revenue opportunities are. We think there's some advertising opportunities associated with that, but that's part of the thing they're still exploring is what is their revenue model? How do they generate their first dollar of revenue?
And where do you get your money?
We get our money from donors, so we're a really independently supported organization. Mr. Lassonde, Pierre Lassonde, who's endowed the program as an MBA alum at the University of Utah and has committed over $25 million to the school and to the entrepreneur program here, but also Zions Bank has been an incredibly huge supporter of the program and a partner with us for the last 10 years in building a student entrepreneurial community. And one thing that you know we do is actually many of our resources and competitions and things are open to any student in the state of Utah, not just University of Utah students. So our goal really was to build an entrepreneurial community at the college level, and Zions Bank has been a big part of that. And we have other donors, the Neilman family, the Miller family, that have been very big supporters of the entrepreneurial community at the University of Utah.
And people who are familiar with the University of Utah campus, or even some of our listeners up here in Summit and Wasatch County that maybe drive into the U Hospital, they would see this brand new building. It looks kind of cool. Can you explain where it is and what it looks like?
Yeah, we're right in the academic center of campus. So we're between the business and engineering schools and just east of the Union Building. And so right in the many, if anybody who's a legacy from my era of the University of Utah, it's we're actually on the site where the old Bowles Hall dorms used to be. So right kind of going back to our roots of where some of the dorms on the campus were. The building's really unique both in the design and function. It's really shaped to it's a kind of organic-looking shape. It's not square and geometric. Designed to look more like the mountains and flow and curve like the hills that are right behind us to the east. It's clad in copper, which is an organic material that we wanted to have change and adapt. We want the building to really be a living organism that changes all the time and adapts to technology and student interest. And as you mentioned in the intro, we've been recognized by Architectural Digest as one of the 9 best university buildings in the world, not just in the country, and received a South by Southwest Excellent in Educational Design Award last year. So the building's gotten a lot of recognition, but more importantly, it's operating and functioning like we hoped it would, which was to increase the student engagement and entrepreneurial activities.
And of the 400 students who are living there, it looks like half are freshmen. That was surprising to me.
Yes, yeah, so that was the goal, was really to get freshmen that are interested in entrepreneurial activities to come up to the University of Utah, give them a really unique home and space to live in and to try and launch their ideas and get engaged with other students. So it's been a real help for us as the university to attract students, not only locally, but from out of state to come to the University of Utah and give them an entirely unique physical facility and programming and resource activity that they can engage in.
For those listeners who are just joining us, we are talking to Troy D'Ambrosio, the executive director of the Lassonde Entrepreneur Institute at the University of Utah. Troy, earlier this month, we had a guest on Mountain Money who is moving the manufacturing business of electric semi-trucks out of the state. He said that he didn't feel like the economic development forces in Utah supported manufacturing and were more focused on high tech. Would you say at the Lassonde Institute that they are more high tech jobs?
No, I think we have a lot of students that are engaged in making physical goods. So we are really a gear-centric group up there, and that's part of the reason our prototyping shop is so big and so active. We do have a lot of high-tech companies like Blurp that was mentioned before, but we have a lot of students that are making medical devices, that are making physical goods. We have a student that just launched a Kickstarter camp, made a very unique backpack, and did a couple of crowdsource funding activities and raised over $1 million on the Kickstarter campaigns to launch their backpack. So we have students that are really focusing in all areas, but a lot on physical goods, both electronics as well as soft goods like tents and backpacking equipment.
When I looked at your website, one of the things that I enjoyed the most was looking at the sort of list of the various projects that were underway. And you mentioned the backpack. How is it that you can make a business here in the 21st century out of a backpack and raise $1 million? What are they doing? What is the innovations that they're coming from?
Yeah, I had the same question really, Roger, when I first saw it as what, you know, does the world need another backpack? And apparently they do, particularly when you take, what they did was take components so that the case that you put your laptop in or that you put your phone in or that you might put a camera in and made individual components that you can then zip together in one backpack and combine with your regular backpack. So very unique kind of design and activity, you know, that they saw a problem and they solved it differently. That's really what we try and get students to do, is focus on a problem and look at the world differently and say, well, hey, you don't have to just deal with the problems. You can actually go out and fix them and change the world and build a solution to problems you see out there.
What are some other fun examples of innovative products that your students are developing? Particularly, I like the idea of hearing people who, quote, make stuff, end quote, you know, because I know that there's a lot of emphasis on high tech.
Yeah. We've got a student that, to tell you just kind of the diversity, we have a young woman that's in the MBA program that developed a coffee popsicle, a coffee flavor popsicle. And so we have students, we have a whole food entrepreneur program to help students who are interested in the food businesses. They can even run, we have a little food truck in our cafe in our building that students can actually run that food truck for a period of time and get the experience of running a restaurant in the building. We have a student that just launched a Kickstarter campaign a few days ago called Clovatech, which is an innovation kind of wireless speaker system that can connect to anything, your TV, to your radio in your car, to your phone. So it gives you independent listening channels on it, very unique. It also helps people with who have hearing problems or hearing aids and stuff and connect to those devices better. So a lot of physical goods like that that we're launching. We've got a student that has developed a really innovative product to measure sidewalks for ADA compliance to make sure that they meet the regulations to do that. That took a very, very complicated set of technologies and lasers and put them into basically a cart with an iPad that can do the things that would take a set of engineers several hours to do, you can now do in a few minutes.
There's another great case study you feature in your annual report. A trio of women have formed a company called Shiro that provides biodegradable feminine hygiene products for women in third world countries. And they're quite a success story, it looks like.
They really are, and they've there's one of those teams that come up with a very unique problem and have been very resourceful. They participated in our Bench to Bedside Medical Innovation Competition. They received funding from our Get Seated program, and now they have office space in the LaSalle studios where they're managing their business out of and getting ready to launch. And they've just done a great job of seeing a problem, like I say, figuring out how to use our resources but other resources and move their take their passion and apply it and move an idea forward.
And if you don't mind, talk about the demographic breakdown of the students. I noticed that there are more men than women, but not by much.
Not by much. That was our first residential year. We were about 40% female and 60% male. This year, going in our new academic year, we're about 50-50 male-female. And so we've really worked on trying to get more women involved in the entrepreneurial activities, making sure that our program set and our resources address those the women that are interested in being entrepreneurs. Because traditionally, it's not just us. It's if you look at startup culture in the Bay Area, there's been a lot in the news about that recently, about how it's not very friendly for women to participate. And so we've been really focused on making sure that our community is not only welcoming to women, but also welcome to any student on campus, whether you be a fine arts major, an engineering major, or a humanities major, that you feel like there's a place for you to either join a team or launch your own idea.
Do you have students who have got projects that are involved in alternative or renewable energy?
We do have some teams that are doing in those areas and working on both alternative battery technologies as well as clean water technologies that use solar power and things. So a very diverse group of that. The energy technologies are, you know, tend to be really costly and time-consuming to launch. So with students, it's we don't see as many things as you may see in a soft good or something like that, but we do have students working in energy technologies as well.
And what organization or project can you point to that has had the most success? Have we had anything that get all the way to a later stage financing yet?
Yeah, there's a couple of that. I mean, We've got a student company that launched a couple years out of our program called Blinksy, and they actually do some work in Park City. They have sensor technology that picks up Wi-Fi signals, and they manage traffic flow. So they've been in Park City for a number of years and doing traffic monitoring, traffic flow, particularly around the Arts Festival. But they also have contracts with the UDOT and the Idaho Department of Transportation and Colorado Department of Transportation, and have had an A round of financing and are generating significant revenue.
And Troy, we just had the founder of that company in studio, and I'm drawing a blank. Is it Pittman?
Mark Pittman, yes.
Mark Pittman. And he came in, and I heard from the city manager in Park City, Diane Foster, before we interviewed him, and she said that Blinksy's really helped us with traffic flow in the Park City area by delivering real-time traffic information. So when they put up those electronic messaging signs to tell people that, you know, the ski parking lot is full and go over to the high school for parking, or if there are delays or if there's a lane closed, that real-time information, they could watch that on a snowy weekend from their homes, they being city and traffic officials here, and could, from their homes, help redirect traffic to help keep our streets clear. And she says that helped us avoid another Carmageddon, which all of our listeners know was an awful day over the Christmas holiday a few years ago. So he came from the University of Utah LaSalle Institute.
That's correct, yeah. He's a student that participated in a number of our activities, received some of our funding from our Get Seated funding that Zions Bank supports, and also entered our Utah Entrepreneur Challenge, which is our statewide student business model competition, and did very well in that. So he's really a great case study, and this is what I love about it. He's not a technical person. Mark was a JD MBA student at the University of Utah, and kind of the inspiration for that idea was he was sitting at a traffic light at 2 o'clock in the morning, and there were no other cars around. The light was red, and he was sitting there saying, why am I waiting in this red light when no traffic is around? And decided to solve that problem, and came to me and said, I've got this idea for a sensor technology. And I said, great, Mark, I can help you. What do you need? And he said, I need an engineer, and I need a little bit of money to build a first prototype. So we were able to connect him both with an electrical engineering student, and then he was able to get a couple of $100 initial ask from our Get Seated program and build a prototype in 6 months. Entered a couple of competitions and received a seed round of funding within about 6 months of his idea being the initiation of his idea. So we're able to kind of provide that kind of acceleration of getting ideas moving and getting them connected with people and getting a company launched out of here. So we have several students that have gotten to revenue while they've been students with us. One student that generated over $125,000 in revenue last year. Launched his company in September, and by May, when he graduated, he had his own business with 5 employees, and we see that happening more and more frequently as we've built the LaSalle studios and kind of concentrated all of the resources into one location where students can find them very easily, and more importantly, where they can help each other. I think that's the thing that we've seen mostly uniquely happen this year that maybe surprised us, is how the students are helping each other just organically in a pro bono kind of free, hey, I'll help you, you help me with some programming, I need some electrical engineering help. And so the ideas are moving forward. Students are either killing bad ideas quicker or the good ideas are moving forward more quickly.
And you just initiated a new competition about 10 days ago. If someone has a great business idea, what do they need to do for that competition?
So that's our High School Entrepreneur Challenge that we just kind of kicked off.
Oh, high school.
Yeah, so we actually have a program that reaches out to high school students and says, if you're a high school student, here's an idea competition. It's a pretty simple. You have to focus on the problem, the solution, and the target customer, and it's a very easy application. We like students to build a prototype in that, whether it be an app or a website or a physical device as part of that. And there's $20,000 of prize money available for high school students. And so last year we had about 160 high school teams from 40-some-odd high schools participate with us. So that's kind of that group of students that we're recruiting up to the LaSalle Studios and the University of Utah that we want to come up and live with us and use our facilities and launch their companies.
Troy D'Ambrosio, Executive Director of LaSalle Entrepreneur Institute at the University of Utah. Very interesting. Congratulations on all the great work down there. Best of luck as you continue. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Renee. Thanks, Roger. Have a great day.
You too.
Bye-bye.
We will be right back on Mountain Money. We're going to be talking local theaters, the Avon and Ideal Theaters in Heber City on Main Street. That business model. We'll hear more about that right after this.
Matt here from San Francisco Design. Since the start of our business in 1990, we have been supporting KPCW. We offer home decor for Park City and Salt Lake and feature modern furnishings from around the world. Whether you're looking to furnish an entire home or just redecorating a single room, we can help with our in-house design team. Located on Bonanza Drive and on the web at sanfrandesign.com.
Joining the Park City Chamber Bureau provides your business with lots of benefits. From business-to-business networking and promotional opportunities to access to our 1,000-plus membership database, becoming a member of the Park City Chamber Bureau is a great investment for your business. Information on joining is online at visitparkcity.com or call us at 649-6100. The Park City Chamber Bureau is a nonprofit, membership-based organization and a proud KPCW supporter.
Welcome back to Mount Money here on KPCW Radio. I'm Renee Bodley here with Roger Goldman, the guest co-host today.
Good morning.
Good morning. So I'm looking at UDOT. Let's just a quick update while we wait for our next guest. We're waiting for Jim Lane, the owner of Avon and Ideal Theaters in Heber City. Waiting to get him on the phone. But while we wait for that, just real quick from UDOT, early season snowstorm continues across parts of northern Utah. They're just warning you to be careful as you drive out there. The streets here in Old Town look pretty clear, and it looks like, Roger, we've got some clearing to the west. So I think sunny skies are on their way.
I don't think that winter is here to stay. And while we're all eager to have it be here to stay, I think it's like a reverse Groundhog Day. We had an early alarm, but I think we've got another 6 weeks of fall coming.
Let's hope. It's like we went right from summer to winter, isn't it?
Yesterday, I put the snow tires on my car, and I thought it was way too early. I actually did it on Friday, and of course, it was proven right yesterday when we would otherwise have been sliding around.
Jim Lane, do we have him on the phone, Bob? Oh, wonderful. And we're going to open up Bob Hendricks' microphone for this segment, too, because Bob, our producer and program director here at KPCW Radio, used to own theaters. So, Jim Lane, do we have you on the phone?
You do.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for being here. You own the Avon and Ideal Theaters in Heber City right there on Main Street. How long have you owned those?
About 13 years now.
So you are not new to this business?
No, we're not.
Tell me what made you think that this would be a fun way to spend your time, owning small theaters in a town like Heber.
Well, we worked for a theater owner part-time back in Rifle, Colorado, and her family owned these two theaters, and they had purchased them at a bankruptcy sale from the Real Theater Group. And her father passed away while he was trying to reopen the Avon, and they asked us if we would like to purchase them. That was probably the starting point.
From an outside observer's perspective, it looks as though the movie exhibition industry has become increasingly concentrated, with most theaters now being owned by a smaller and smaller number of chains who in turn are owned by investment firms and have moved pretty far away from the model that you're embracing. What's it like to try to compete in that environment?
Well, it depends on your location. The fact of the matter is that Heber, being 20 miles from multiplexes in two directions, we still attract a good number of people from the Heber Valley. We primarily stick with family-friendly movies, unless, of course, it's a certain time of the year when we can't get anything else. And for the most part, the people in the Heber Valley embrace that. When we bring in an R movie because there isn't anything else to show, our attendance is off, and it's very noticeable.
Let me ask you, Jim, about people probably don't understand what it's costing you to rent a movie every week. Can you give us some numbers of what you're paying for a first-run movie?
When we started in the business 13 years ago, the average was about 40 to 45%. Now it's up to 60 to 67%, and that's straight off the top of the ticket. So most of the ticket proceeds go right straight back to Hollywood. And then, of course, on top of that, you have the credit card fees and anything else that we have to deal with. I mean, in the state of Utah, you have to pay taxes on tickets, which in most states, they're considered a service, so there is no tax. So that's just another 6.5% that comes right off the top, along with the credit card fees.
So your profits basically are in the concession stand, then?
They are, absolutely. Without concessions, the theaters would not be open.
And I have to say, I've been to your theaters and, one, love your popcorn. Love going there. It's just, if you live anywhere in Heber's downtown, it's fun to walk there. And you've got some great concessions.
Well, thank you.
Tell our listeners what you have. And are some of them homemade?
Well, we have the Candy and Ice Cream Store, which is located in the corner of the Avon Theater that is open during the summer months. We make our ice cream and our candy right in the store. Next spring, when we reopen the store, we're going to have 24 flavors of ice cream available to people, and it can be taken into the theaters with you. So, you know, it's just one of those things. It was originally an ice cream parlor when the building was first built, and then, of course, it changed a lot of other different things, and we thought it would be nice to bring it back as an ice cream parlor.
So while paying those kind of percentages, is it difficult for you to obtain first-run films at the same time that they're being run at the multiplexes?
During certain times of the year, absolutely not. During the summer months and during the holiday season, Hollywood is more than happy to give us prints. The cutoff is usually at about 3,000 prints. If it's anything over 3,000 prints nationally, we're pretty much guaranteed a movie. During the slow time of the year, the fall and the dead of winter, Hollywood gets a little bit stingy with their prints, and they target the metropolitan areas because they get more for tickets. But to give you an example, this fall, things have been very slow, and of course, we had one of the worst years nationally for the box office in 17 years, and that was nationwide, not just us. But we asked for a copy of the movie It from Warner Brothers, and Warner Brothers declined to give us a copy, even though there were 4,400 prints out there. And we were rather shocked, but they know the history of Heber and our movies. And not unlike the big theater chains, they know the history of Heber with our movies, which is, I think, one of the reasons why Heber won't get a multiplex anytime soon, because certain times of the year, 80 to 90% of what they produce is all R. And if you have 8 screens, you've got to have something to put on those screens that people watch. So we were unable to get a copy of It, even though it broke box office records for its opening. And we were kind of disappointed with that because it could have been a nice shot in the arm if people would have come. But that's kind of a crapshoot at that point. We don't know. So
I want to circle back to a comment you just made about what's gone on in the industry as a whole this year and get sort of your take on what's Hollywood doing wrong? Because, you know, we're in an era where you had those remarkably low box office attendance records. And frankly, from my own personal observation, there were many, many weeks when you could look at the paper and say, that's not a movie I want to go to. What are they missing?
Well, I think you're right. I think the people in America have gotten very picky about what they'll pay to see in the movie theaters. They know that if they wait a few more weeks, they can get them on streaming video. They can get them out of Redbox. You know, they have other options other than going to the movie theater. I think that's hurting Hollywood in a big way. But the fact of the matter is that 75% of the box office now earned by movies is overseas. So as long as Hollywood continues to make profits from overseas, they're not going to worry about the American market too much. And I don't know if that's a smart business move on their part or not, because eventually I think it'll come around to bite them.
Go ahead.
Let me ask you about one of the other obstacles you face every night is parking on Main Street. Do you get some opposition from some of the owners of the businesses on Main Street?
Well, we don't get a lot of opposition from them because most of them are closed. We're about the only business that's open in the evening, so it kind of works in our favor. The problem we run into is that when we have a big blockbuster and we have a lot of people coming, then they occupy every spare space that they can find. And the city has made no effort to try and increase the amount of parking downtown whatsoever. In fact, they want the merchants to try and make that happen, which I don't personally know how that's going to happen since there's no property available to put a parking lot on other than a piece that sits behind the county building. It's within a block of everything downtown and would be a very, very nice asset for all of the businesses downtown during the day and at night. But nothing seems to happen there because I think the property belongs to the county and the city can't acquire it because it costs too much.
Well, let's talk more about challenges of doing business on Main Street in Heber City. Main Street's been the focus for city leaders for the past couple of years. They were looking at form-based code. Of course, you've got a lot of traffic. Highway 40 is Main Street. You're looking at least 10, 20 years away from a bypass to get those trucks off of Main Street. What kind of conversations do you have with city leadership about the challenges you face as a business owner?
Well, they're kind of, you know, throwing their hands in the air, wondering what they can do. They know that the bypass has been planned for 20 years, and now they say it's another 20 years out. But they also had traffic people down in, you know, Heber a few weeks ago, and they said, well, we see complete gridlock within a couple of years if population continues to increase the way it's increasing. Initially, I think the merchants downtown were very opposed to having a bypass, but they also see that, you know, having gridlock on, you know, in downtown Heber and all the noise and everything else really affects their business too. So I think you're kind of at a crossroads where people have to sit down and say, hey, you know, we've got to come up with a solution for this. Otherwise, it's going to become unworkable. I mean, we've seen several major accidents in the downtown area just simply because people are in a hurry and there's not enough room. And so it creates, you know, a lot of frustration for the people that are down there all the time. And we know that it keeps people from coming to the downtown area because it's not a pleasant place to be. It's dirty because of all the traffic. It's loud because of all the traffic. And personally, it's not safe. So what can you do? I mean, they put in stoplights, they put in pedestrian crossings, but we still see people run those every day. And at some point, somebody's going to get hit and hurt again.
So
what do you do?
It's a time of transition, it seems, in Wasatch County with the enormous amount of growth that's coming both to the county and to Heber City. When you look at the planned development that is proposed along Highway 40 around the UVU building that's eventually going to happen, as a business owner in Heber, what do you think the solution is when it comes to managing growth in that area?
Well, I think people need to sit back and realize that it's going to happen. You know, when the Olympics were in the Valley and when they were up in Park City, we actually became part of the real world, I think. I mean, people noticed that Heber was a nice place to be. And now the people in Park City are moving to Heber because they can afford it. And the people in Heber are leaving because they can't afford it anymore. But I think that we need to sit down and say, hey, this is going to happen. We need to think of ways to make it happen in a way that's acceptable to everybody. And building housing complexes, every place you can put one, is not necessarily the right idea because we're going to run out of resources, water being the biggest one at some point. We see our water bills and our sewage bills going up and up and up to the point where, you know, I can't believe that we pay as much for these bills as we do these days, but we do. But they've got to build new systems to accommodate the growth. So we just need to sit down and come up with a way to make it happen in a way that we can deal with as opposed to just letting it happen.
Let me circle back to your business for a moment. The first time I went to the theater, I was expecting perhaps something was kind of run down and maybe some second to none sound. But it's spectacular for Heber City. You've spent a lot of money in both of the theaters to make it a good experience for us.
Well, we did. And initially when we bought them, we thought we've got to do this the right way. We were encouraged to put in stadium seating right from the beginning. And I kind of explained to people that, you know, that kind of investment in a building that seats 400 people is a little bit over the top for Heber. I mean, we've had thoughts of, you know, splitting the buildings into smaller rooms so that we could have multiple screens. And I think personally that's the way to go, but it's not going to be inexpensive to do it. I mean, we have plans drawn up to make the Avon into a threeplex with a front screen in the front that would be stadium seated that would seat 200 people. And then two smaller stadium-seated auditoriums that would seat 100. But before anything like that happens, we need to do something to address the parking issue because it's only logical to assume that if we have more movie choices, we'll have more people, even though we don't seat any more people than we currently seat. The ideal could in turn be turned into a twoplex, which would give us five total screens in town, which would be a nice stepping stone to a multiplex because at that point you're going to have to start bringing in some alternative content and you can, you know, test the waters to see if it's actually going to be supported. Because once again, you know, certain times of the year, if you don't have anything to show, you can't pay the bills.
Thank you, Jim. We've been talking to Jim Lane, the owner of the Avon and Ideal Theaters in Heber City. We appreciate your time this morning, and Mountain Money will be right back. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you.
This is Steve Roney with Berkshire Hathaway Home Services Utah Properties. We continue to be proud supporters of KPCW, our local source for Park City News. Our agents are Summit and Wasatch County's source for real estate, and we can be reached at bhhsutah.com.
Whitney Wall here from Park City Mountain and KPCW sponsor. Park City Mountain's Epic Promise recently committed to a net zero footprint by 2030. The environment is our business. By 2030, we commit to zero net emissions, zero waste to the landfill, and a zero net operating impact to forests and habitat. More information at epicpromise.com.
And welcome back to Mountain Money. In studio this morning, we are privileged to have our guest, Brett Webster, who is the owner of the Webster Gallery at 312 Main Street. Good morning, Brett.
Good morning. How's everybody?
Thanks for being here. I guess I wanted to start by asking you about
A little bit about what your gallery shows. Well, tell us a little bit of the overall picture of your business.
Well, I offer a variety. I mean, starting with kind of classic landscape, and I'm from Utah. I love Utah. Lots of course aspens and local scenery and mountains and desert, and I have a home in Moab as well. But it's pretty diverse, too. I'm not, I like Old World. I like Italy. I've got, snowflakes. Some very difficult things interest me. Technically challenging things, nature in differing aspects, different perspectives, high-speed photos of water droplets colliding, is something that is kind of deliciously hard to do, and yet they presents just these playful and entertaining images. Snowflakes are like that also. There's a lot of special equipment, years of kind of improvement and refinement. You have to have the right storm, lots of light. Yeah, you're always fixing it. It's a problem solving exercise, but when they turn out, a snowflake, a simple snowflake blown up 4 feet high, is really my excitement. My goal for many of them is I want to bring out what's amazing about these tiny little creatures that affect our lives every day, like today and yesterday, and yet present them in a really beautiful way as much as possible. I you know what amazes me, so often people come in the gallery and you hear, oh, I didn't know they actually look like that. You know, the little paper ones we make in first grade and everything, right? And it surprises me to hear that when people go, I didn't know they actually look like that.
And just backing up, your gallery shows your photographs, and you've been a photographer for how many years?
Oh, I've been doing this my whole life, since I was a little boy. I have always loved it, and I've always loved the outdoors and nature. I grew up kind of isolated on a small cattle farm here in Utah. And so my nearest friends were miles away, right? So you end up wandering around the streams and ponds a lot and entertaining yourself a lot. And finding little things to marvel at, you just can't help it, I had a long dual career. I did my photography, and I would just do an art show or two a year or three. But I'm a chemical engineer also, and loved that aspect of it. I love science. I think it can't help but affect how you see things. There's an amazing amount of beauty. We're swimming in awesome stuff. We're surrounded, smothered in beauty. All kind. There's nature, snow and cliffs and mountains and snowflakes. And then there's families and love. And then there's physics and the mathematics. It's just all these things, And yet we pay the bills, we get up on a Monday morning, we sip our coffee, we toil, and we experience things, we tragedy, strive, and yet the whole time, all these things, there's this greater perspective that's going on, it's indifferent to our problems, and look at us, I mean, we're the ones that are so well equipped to revel in this, right? I mean, if we don't go out and have some awe and some beauty, if we don't do it, I mean, who's gonna do it? And look how well we do it. It's almost as if we have an obligation. And yet, we forget. So in as much as we help each other, in as much as we help each other remember these things in our lives. Remember beauty? It's not an ugly world. Our world is not ugly. Our world is beautiful.
So, Brett, how much of your year is spent out and about traveling and taking the pictures?
It's erratic, and it's a little hard to quantify, but maybe a quarter. Maybe a quarter am I really focused. I'm traveling someplace, I have some objective, or I have in my studio, I've got apparatus, and I'm doing things, you know, tinkering and tubes and water droplets or something, or snowflakes, or working on things. Maybe a fourth is a fair.
And where have you been in the last couple of years that we might find interesting, and how would we see it reflected in the gallery?
Well, there's a lot of exciting things. I was in the UK not long ago. A lot of new work. I'm sure my work from the UK is probably not what you would conjure up in your imagination. Like there's a bridge. There's a particular bridge. Some photos I have of this viaduct in way out in the countryside, south of London, where looking through the supports, and one after the other, and it's just this amazing 11 million bricks, right? And these supports have these hollow oval, and as you look through them, you know, it's like this. You look through the mirror, you know, when you bounce two mirrors together, and it seems to go on forever, except you're in that shot, right? You can never get it quite straight, and yet this perspective is like that, and so the UK, I've got some really interesting ones from the Irish coast and some Scotland and stuff. And so that's some of the latest at the gallery that's been very popular.
You don't take pictures of people?
Yeah, no. Sometimes they accidentally get in a shot. know? it hasn't been something that it just didn't really occur to me. I mean, I've got some ideas that, I'd like to work with the human eye, you know, really yeah. beautiful feminine eyes up close. And there's some ideas and things I'd like to do with different lighting. I've always been interested in ice and heat and leaves and rocks and erosion and time and history, and I'm a scientist and I guess those things have just always, there's stories there and there's some challenging things to get, and so it affects me, and I try to tell those stories, and it pleases me personally, and if it appeals to others, then that's good. It helps me.
So you're a scientist, you're an artist. You're also a businessman, and we are a business show. You
yes.
run a gallery on Main Street.
Yes.
What are the pluses and minuses of having a gallery in Old Town?
Well, here's one thing that is not heralded enough about Main Street and the art situation. I mean, there are 20-something galleries in this short little straight
yeah.
road. And it's an indulgent art experience. It's a feature of Park City that's really pretty amazing. If you go to Jackson Hole, if you go to Aspen, there's galleries. But you got to wander around. You better have a map. There's blocks here and there. You might get lost. Man, on Main Street, you make one stroll. Bing, 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 like a little pachinko ball. You just had a slathering of an art experience, all in walking distance, and it's a unique feature to Park City, and something people enjoy. Visitors come in, they're like, wow, I really didn't know that I was going to get this fire hose of wonderful galleries.
When I lived in Salt Lake, the gallery stroll night in Salt Lake was good, but you had to get in your car and drive
right.
from gallery,
it's a gallery
to gallery.
Drive.
And exactly, it's a gallery drive. And it was so nice to come up here on the gallery stroll nights, which is the last Friday of every month. Is that
That's right?
Right.
In fact, it's this Friday.
Oh, this
as
Friday.
Well.
Well, look at that. There you go, listeners.
There
you
go.
Friday.
Date night, September. You know what? Prices get a little softer when the season slows down. So
how
there's
does
a
that,
buying tip.
Does that really work in a gallery? When I walk into a gallery, I'm so impressed by the art. It seems like such a sacred space to be in this gallery that you don't really want to haggle in a gallery, do you?
I mean, it varies. There's philosophically, there are different approaches. And some galleries, you know, most galleries are representing other artists. My gallery, I have my work. And some prices are hard and fast. And some, they vary. Ours vary a little, you know. And if I'm annoyed one day, or and if I'm in there, you know, or if I'm particularly happy, which is far more common, you know, and someone comes in and I'm just a softy. I stay away from the gallery because someone likes my work. I want them to have. I'm honored. I'm honored, of course, if they like my work, you know, and. I mean, now I have my work scattered around. It's many museums, five U.S. embassies around the world. I'm very most proud of that, and to kind of participate in diplomacy through beauty and art is an honor. And but the fact is that my gallery, they do vary. You can arm wrestle with us some.
You just told everybody out there that you're a softie.
I'm not insulted. Yeah, I'm not insulted. It's a business, you know.
Well, my observation of most art galleries is there's often room. If you, and particularly if it's almost like used car dealers. If it's the end of the month, you might have a better chance.
Oh, let me share this. I don't know if I'll run. I'll be quick. I mean, look, for decades, I would do art shows, high-end ones, you know. Park City, you know, Beverly Hills, always the fun. The Utah one, you know, La Jolla, Jackson, all these, Aspen. But here's a tip, man. If you're at an art show and something catches your eye, now you're going to risk it may disappear if it's a one-of-a-kind piece. But, man, I'm telling you, if you show up on Sunday afternoon when it 1 hour before it is time to tear down, believe me, there is never a softer time to try and get a piece of art, then write it, tear down by time, especially if it's big and heavy. Are you kidding me? You do not. When you're in art show, and look, you're on the clock, man. You're tearing down. It's going to be chaos. And if you can and close that one out, that's my tip of the day.
Good tip. We've got 30 more seconds, Brett. Anything else you want to add about your business, Brett Webster Galleries?
And how things have changed on Main Street.
Well, it grows and it's pleasing to see the robustness, and I see the impact of Vail. I think the crowds continue on, and we're very happy, and we thrive, and with all the other businesses, it's kind of a critical mass. It's positive for everybody.
Well, I want to thank you, Brett Webster, for spending time with us this morning on Mountain Money.
Oh, I'm pleased to be here. Thank you.
Wish we had more time. We'll be right back.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided in part by AMA Waterways and Park City Air Cruise and Travel, 565-4730, parkcityaircruiseandtravel.com. Long Reimer Weiniger Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, lrw-law.com. Fred Marshall Painting, painting Park City's home since 1974, fredmarshallpainting.com, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you.
Welcome back to Mountain Money. I want to thank Renee for letting me join her this morning, and I mostly want to thank our great sponsors for Mountain Money, Mountain West Bank, Berkshire Hathaway Home Services Utah Properties, San Francisco Design, Jones, Waldo, Holbrook, and McDonough, Park City Mountain and Apex Residents, and Veriden Park City, Columbus Pacific Properties.
Roger, it's been great having you here. We want to thank our guest, Brett Webster with Webster Galleries. We just heard from him. Jim Lane, the owner of Avon and Ideal Theaters in Heber City. And we started the hour with Troy D'Ambrosio, the executive director of the LaSonde Entrepreneur Institute at the University of Utah. It's been a great edition of Mountain Money. Thank you for listening. Have a great day. NPR News starts right now.